Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station. The Score!
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
Allen Robinson is everything you would hope for your best offensive player to be. They are in a cap situation, the Bears are, where they could pay him, but then it sort of handcuffs you a little bit if you do. I think when it comes down to it, that's not Allen Robinson's problem. That's the Bears' problem, and at 27 years old, probably the last big contract he can necessarily count on.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
David Montgomery, he was in a zone run scheme in college, but my observations from last season, and they continue the other day, he seems best with a more immediate vertical charge as he's receiving the ball. Talked to you about that a lot last year, where when he gets it and he hesitates, he can do some nifty things. He can make a few guys miss, and that's all cool. But you're not actually gaining yards. You know, you're gaining lateral yards, which don't really count.
Co-host of the Score post-game show with Olin Krutz.
I don't know how many times I was on with you last year, literally screaming at times about how slow the process of the Bears offense was. And getting Mitch to the line of scrimmage with like 6 seconds or left. He has no idea what's going on. He's looking across at the defense. He's trying to get some motion going. They're taking timeouts. We didn't see any of that last week. So that does point to the O-line coach, the coordinator, the folks looking at the quarterback and his mechanics.
Big Ant Herron, bringing you an in-depth preview of this week's Bears game with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Glenview Luxury Imports. The North Shore's newest Alfa Romeo and Maserati dealership has arrived. Visit GLIGlenview.com. They've got it. And this segment with Anthony Herron is brought to you by Bet Rivers Sportsbook, Chicago's hometown sportsbook. Take a look on Twitch if you like. Come out and join us. Anthony Herron is right there. We got the two box set up, and you can see him at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Anthony, how are you?
Good, man. Just out here making some personal history. Not only twitching, which became personal history for me whenever the first time I did this with you was, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago or whatever, but my ice cream cleanse is over. I think all 3 or 4 people who were aware I was in the midst of an ice cream cleanse that has now ended.
Wait. Hold on. Back it up here. What is an ice cream cleanse?
Well, I mean, for me, the drastic amounts of ice cream I tend to consume, it's usually sometime after 11 p.m. when I'm like, you know what? I'm getting sleepy. You know what would be great before I just rest my head on the pillow at night? About a bowl full of ice cream. You know, at least a pint or more of ice cream before I rest
ice
my
cream!
Weary head.
Ice cream!
Ice cream! So as of yesterday evening, because there was some cake involved, and what better to accompany some tasty sweet cake than ice cream, I decided that it was time. I've been working towards the birthday as the goal, the threshold. I'm going to get to at least the birthday, go at least a good month with no ice cream, and I did it. And I thought about maybe even extending it because my son's birthday is in a couple of weeks. Said, man, I wait till Bishop's birthday. Nah, I couldn't do it. I had to let it rip last night.
Happy birthday. So what are we, 37?
No, I'm actually my 40s now, man. I'm 41. I'm 41 now.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, and people always talk about how young you look, and I think it's just you're lucky enough to be juxtaposed with me here, and you're going to look younger and better. What's your go-to flavor for ice cream?
It depends on what it's accompanying. For me, if I'm – because my preferred cake, if it was, all right, you know, Dead Man Walking, you're on the Green Mile, what is your cake of choice? It would be a great pound cake. My grandma, God rest her soul, used to make the most amazing pound cake on planet Earth, so I would accompany that with any variety of ice cream flavors, chocolate, vanilla, nothing too exotic. I don't need a bunch of, you know, accoutrement in there with the ice cream, but just something very basic. But usually if you go to a restaurant, somebody's just got a real, like, rich chocolate cake that's there, which I don't mind. I just don't like it as much as pound cake. So if you got a chocolate cake going, then it's got to be vanilla ice cream, in my humble opinion.
There you have it. Yeah. Anthony Herron, birthday boy. When you saw what the tendencies now that the Bears have shown offensively, let's start on that side of the ball. Is this identity or is this setup? By which I mean, and if I go by some of the data that Kevin Fishbane put together at The Athletic, no team has passed less on first down than the Bears have. The Bears have been an old-fashioned, get-off-the-bus-running team, and some people in this city just absolutely adore that. We also know how Matt Nagy thinks, and while we're real quick to say, wow, the Bears have a new identity, maybe he's thinking, all right, we've shown this against a couple of dog-ass teams, and now the Falcons are going to get something completely different for which they haven't prepared. What do you think?
I think Matt Nagy knows he needs to win some damn games. And I think he spent the entire offseason saying, what puts my team in the best position to win games? I believe that he truly did. And this was my hope for how he would handle the offseason. And through two games, it seems that he did, because he strikes me. His personality, his manner of being seems to be someone who's willing to be introspective, who's willing to, like, examine his role in the cosmos. And in the cosmos of the Chicago Bears, Matt Nagy wasn't calling the offense last season that suited his squad. It suited Matt Nagy. It suited what he was hoping Mitch Trubisky and his offensive line and his wide receivers would be in his very glasses half full approach. But he wasn't calling the offense that put his team in the best shape to win. And why the Bears are an unimpressive 2-0 squad right now is because they're still not necessarily playing that great. The actual personnel is still executing at a fairly inconsistent manner in some ways, especially at quarterback, in a similar fashion to what we saw last season. But the head man, the play caller, has, to me, drastically improved over how he was managing the Bears' offense and the Bears as a whole early in the season last year. Even though the defense for the Chicago Bears isn't playing at the level that we've seen them play, that we feel still like they're capable of competing at, it's still a good enough defense where if you set them up with some ball control, with some field position, with just enough points, they will make you plays, and I anticipate they will continue to get better and better via health this season. And we're seeing Matt Nagy utilizing the run phase, utilizing, you know, sort of varied tempo. You know, every once in a while he'll throw a little hurry up in there, but going super fast doesn't let that defense rest, and that's part of what we can see at times. So I think the all-around just management of the offense, and then in turn the game at large, has drastically improved for Matt Nagy this season. So I think he's going to be willing, is my impression, he's going to be willing for this to be the consistent identity of the Chicago Bears, while still hoping that maybe he'll be able to get into his full bag of tricks at some point. But I think he really spent a very introspective offseason and said, I got to stop being me, like the whole be you thing. I can't just be me. I need to be who the Chicago Bears need me to be.
What is the significance of not just Anthony Miller's subpar game, but the Bears' very public reaction to it, and Nagy himself using the media, using every opportunity to point out mistakes that were made by this guy who's still a significant prospect and an important part of their offense? Does that mean this game is particularly important for somebody who's had the issues he's had?
I think it means this season is particularly important, but it's an astute observation, man, because I talked to you and Connor in the past about the way that Matt Nagy was addressing Mitch Trubisky publicly. Now, the quarterback position, very different as far as how you address it publicly than any other position on the field. But there were a lot of points where Nagy would phrase things in a way that I felt like perhaps could have maybe protected Mitch even more than he was. And being somewhat, you know, he's really not a complete open book, but there's things he's willing to share with the media and address with the media that a lot of other NFL head coaches simply aren't. You know, he'll go places that some guys frankly don't usually. And with Anthony Miller being a receiver, being now in his third year in the league, and being a guy that the Bears are hoping to count on as their number two, as their Robin to the Batman that is A-Rob, and he's just not stepping up in the way that they need him to for them to be at their best, and where Matt Nagy isn't just completely, you know, quote-unquote throwing him under the bus or really kind of just, you know, eviscerating him to the media, but being willing to point out mistakes and some of the minutiae that Anthony Miller isn't executing well, I think that matters because it's a big season. I don't necessarily think it's a big week. I don't think Anthony Miller is leaving the lineup anytime soon, frankly, because I don't think the Bears have enough receivers that can take his job. But what I do see emerging, and I've been talking about it after every single game, even after whatever it was, just a three-catch game from Darnell Mooney in the opener, mm-hmm. It was impressive. And the Bears were talking about how impressive he was throughout the offseason, not just the speed, but the acumen that he attacks the game with and how serious he takes the details of the game and learning the position. And frankly, he's a better athlete than Anthony Miller. So I think overall, I don't know that Darnell Mooney is ready to be the Bears' number two, but as far as just putting the ball in the end zone, even if it's only a couple of touches for a game, that's somebody who's now emerging as an additional threat for this Bears offense that we're seeing that begin to take reps away from Anthony Miller.
Some have a difficult time really appreciating the detail that an NFL wide receiver needs to have and how big a jump it is from college. In every draft, we talk about it, and Matt Miller's going to join us at 11 today. We always talk to him about the wide receivers who have all this tremendous physical skill, and we see highlights, and we see collegiately, guy can dominate physically. The chances are that if you're a prospect, the person you're lining up over, whatever defense is designed, you know, you probably have seven wide receivers out there anyway because they're getting into all the bad defensive backs on a team with all of these empty sets. It's just different in the NFL. And I always hear guys talk about having the split perfect, knowing the angle of the route stem, when to break it off, even getting a free release. You know, what I see from Mooney that's interesting is they're not using tricks to get him off the line. Mm-hmm. They're not using the stack set or necessarily the bunch set where you're going to say, however we do it, one of those guys is going to come free. He's earning his way into his route in a way that you don't usually see from that young receiver. I just don't know. It's really frustrating that Anthony Miller still doesn't seem to understand that everything matters on every play.
And there are some guys who perhaps go through their career that it just takes longer to get there to that point. But we've seen stretches. Like we saw a stretch late last season where Anthony Miller became more dependable, and it looked like he was coming along with his progression in that manner. Like Tariq Cohen is a guy who was able to just kind of get by off his physical traits early in his career. And while we still, even this season, haven't seen a vast array of splash plays, but Tariq Cohen's playing better football this year, just in general. We're not seeing boneheaded mistakes of giving up yardage as a punt returner. We're not seeing him just working his way laterally over and over again when he either receives the ball or is handed the ball within the Bears offense. Tariq Cohen's getting vertical. Tariq Cohen's not giving up, you know, silly yards in the return game. He's thinking the game at a higher level because he's been around it longer. He's been coached at it really in a really ardent manner, and now it's starting to come to fruition, and that's where Anthony Miller needs to go. Even if Anthony Miller doesn't end up becoming, I was talking to Lawrence about it earlier in the week, I think, you know, his ceiling might be, you know, I don't know, just one of the better, I suppose, slot receivers in the league, like a Golden Tate type. Like, I don't think Anthony Miller's ever going to be this ace number one guy who's at the top end of your roster, but he could be. I think he's got Golden Tate potential, and he's not thinking the game at a high enough level, and the focus just doesn't seem to be consistently there, even on something like the first interception from the game last week, where, yeah, A-Rob ends up getting beat to the spot by one defender, but there's two other defenders converging there, and it seemed to me, at least in part, because of the fact that Anthony Miller got jammed up, not even right at the line of scrimmage, got jammed up as he was two or three steps into the route and just wasn't paying attention to that defender. Anthony Miller's on the ground, another defender can fall off into coverage, and the window becomes that much more condensed, that much tighter, and that's why, to the point you're making, all those things matter. The spacing, the stem, the urgency that you run the route with, and if you do stumble or fall, how quickly you get up and continue the route, and we're just not consistently seeing that from Anthony Miller, that urgency and focus that even when you're not the one getting the ball, you can still have a positive effect on the play for others.
We're talking with Anthony Heron, who joins us every Friday for the 10 o'clock hour to talk about the Bears. We're going to get to the upcoming opponent. We also have to talk about the pass rush and how it can be improved, how it can build on what it did last week against a pretty bad offensive line, frankly, but they could have some opportunities again this week if they are healthy. There is an injury that seemed insignificant that I think is more significant than it may first appear. We're going to get into all of that as we continue with Anthony Heron next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Obviously, I think we made a big jump. We talked about it from week one to week two, so loved where it was last week. Got pressure on the quarterback, like you said, got some sacks, got some production, affected the quarterback. Like where it's at, it'll continue to improve. I'm going to need it big time come Sunday.
You have to whip the man's ass in front of you.
Chuck Pagano talking about the Bears' pass rush that produced four sacks and some hurries against the beleaguered Giants' offensive line. A little taller task this week. Anthony Heron is with us. You can watch him on Twitch. The conversation is right there in front of you at twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. The pass rush still seems to be a work in progress, and I know that Pro Football Focus and the other tracking agencies will tell us that perhaps the sacks are to come because of the number of pressures and the number of successful rushes that haven't necessarily resulted in sacks. But what did you see? Do you see improvement? Do you see reason for optimism?
I do. Yeah, I think that when you add a guy like Robert Quinn, and you saw the very first play, what that potentially means. And, you know, he's not in shape yet. He basically didn't have too much of a preseason with the Bears. So I think it's an advantage the Bears have, I suppose, not even an advantage necessarily, but it's certainly a positive position they're in, where they're able to win games while still trying to get players in shape and in tune. And I think a lot of teams around the league find themselves in a similar circumstance. The Bears just happen to be 2-0 in the midst of that. But, you know, Robert Quinn, he's not in great shape yet. And we saw throughout the game where his explosiveness, his urgency that he was attacking things with did seem to wane a bit. And so he's basically being used right now, at least last week was, as kind of a situational pass rusher. I do think, though, in addition to where the opponent can't necessarily just always send the extra edge help to Khalil Mack's side when Robert Quinn's on the field, I actually think Barkevious Mingo looked better. Now, maybe he was going to look better in the second game, whether Robert Quinn was out there or not. But, you know, I know what it's like when you got a veteran who shows up, like a guy who's made more money than you, or a guy who perhaps is just in a position where he's viewed differently by the coaching staff, and you feel like, oh, man, I've been here, I've been earning my stripes, I've been the one putting the work in. I went through that when I was in Detroit, and suddenly after I was thought I was doing well and running with the twos, and then here comes Alonzo Spellman out of nowhere for one of his last NFL stops, and I'm looking around like, wait a minute, man, I thought you guys liked me, thought you guys trusted me, and you're in a position where you do need to respond to that. And I think, you know, maybe Barkevious Mingo was going to look better in week two no matter what, because it's the second game of the season and he didn't have an offseason either. But I think perhaps just having Robert Quinn on the field just added a bit of additional urgency to him as well. So I still wouldn't count on Barkevious Mingo as being a force on the field, but he was effective. He went from doing virtually nothing week one to doing some stuff week two, and he's a talented guy. He's the type of guy that as a line coach, as a purveyor of the pass rush arts, that you love to deal with, that you love to work with and try to mold, because he's got a lot of potential. He's got some game. So it was good to see him start to step forward a bit more. And I think we're going to continue to see more from Mack and Hicks and Mingo and certainly Quinn just on a weekly basis. And this is an offense where they're going to get some opportunities to do that.
I forgot Alonzo Spellman was on Detroit. That was I remember seeing him. I was doing a Chicago Rush game. and they were playing the Las Vegas whatever they were, and he was on that team. Because I know you were involved with the AFL, and he had he dyed his hair like completely blonde, and he's standing outside the arena smoking, and I'm like, that's Alonzo Spellman.
That's Alonzo Spellman.
Right?
Alonzo Spellman's the only guy who's even taller when he got in his three-point stance. Like, right? He was so bow-legged, and his arms were so incredibly long. And when he put his arm on the ground, he actually looked taller than he did when he was standing up straight. He should have been every bit of 6'7", but he was so bow-legged and nothing but muscle. So he's about as intimidating as a football player is going to get on the line of scrimmage. And he showed up in Detroit. I'm, as a guy who grew up as a Bears fan, of course, see Alonzo Spellman strutting onto the field. I'm like, wait a minute, man, that's Alonzo Spellman. That's the guy when I'd go out to Soldier Field for the games, I'd look at, and I went to like some 3-sack game that he had one time. I'm like, that's the guy. That's why they drafted him in the first round. And he never did anything like that again his entire Bears career. So, yeah, Zoe had potential. And when Zoe showed up, people noticed. When Robert Quinn steps onto the field, people notice. That's a good thing for Khalil Mack. It's a good thing for Akeem Hicks. And it's nice that it seems like Barkevious Mingo perhaps responded to that in an enhanced manner as well.
I mentioned an injury that seemed like a nothing but might be a something. Let me explain my logic here. John Jenkins, the nose tackle, was put on IR with a thumb injury that he suffered against the Giants that he played through. The Bears have been uniquely healthy so far. And they're already down Eddie Goldman. And it was nice for them, even if you're going to move Bilal Nichols there and play him as a zero technique or play him wherever you, if you want to slide him around off a shoulder of the center or not, that having Jenkins there was kind of nice to have. He was active. He was in the rotation, a big, strong guy that can at least hold the center of the defense. That hurts to lose him, because I'm thinking about late in the season, not now. I don't know how long it's going to take him to get healthy and if that's a return from IR and how those designations work. I just think it's important. You can never have, in a defense like this, too many capable, solid 300-and-some-pound veteran interior offensive linemen. And I just sort of circled that as something you don't want to have bite you later.
It's going to be something to watch, because Bilal Nichols, at least what we've seen early in his career in the NFL, where the interesting thing with his development is that in college at what was it, Delaware, he was more of a two gap of a run based sort of scheme defensively in college. And then he showed up in Chicago, and immediately his rookie year, he showed he could be a guy that can penetrate. And it is two very different skill sets. A lot of people think of interior defensive line as just being something where everybody in there is just wrestling with the guy in front of them and trying to push them back against their will. That's not everyone's skill set. You know, like, we're going to see Grady Jarrett this week from Atlanta. He's not necessarily going to push folks around, but for a guy who's over 300 pounds and only 6 foot tall, so he's built like a boulder, but he moves like a ballet dancer. I mean, he can get outside of you. He has great finesse moves, quickness off the snap. He is kind of a modern Warren Sapp type, where he's not necessarily going to overpower you that frequently. And Bilal Nichols, he was more of an edge guy with the playmaking ability he showed early on with the Bears, but he's sort of the best option they have available right now to focus on playing over the center, to focus on playing that one technique and occasionally the zero technique and run downs. That's not necessarily where his skill set and his playmaking has come best early on in his NFL career, but he's tasked with doing it. And I think overall, the fact that he's shown he can be a penetrator, he can be an edge player to the outside shoulder of centers and guards early in his career, if he shows this year that he can be that guy to sort of eat up blocks on a consistent basis, this could be a great money-making year, I think, for Bilal Nichols, even while his numbers could potentially dip as far as actually playing in the backfield.
How excited are you for Jalen Johnson against this wide receiver core, whether he is on Ridley or whether he's on Julio Jones? Julio Jones listed on the injury report with a hamstring, and there's some conflicting reports as to the optimism, pessimism for his availability. I'm assuming he's going to play, but Jalen Johnson showed us pretty much everything that he was advertised with him. And now this sets up, as I think I phrased it before, either one of these welcome to the NFL football is hard moments, or, oh my goodness, we might have a star kind of moments.
And what we saw week one, when you think of Detroit and Matthew Stafford's passing abilities, his arm talent, and then, of course, you end up with Daniel Jones last week, so he's not as refined a quarterback as what you saw week one and what the Bears will see this weekend, what Jalen Johnson will see this weekend. So he's going to be challenged by the totality of an offense, I think, in a way that he hasn't yet in his career, because the Falcons have been putting up points, man. They've been scoring. They've been moving the ball. They've been doing so with a fairly pedestrian rushing attack up to this point. And it's unfortunate that Matt Ryan is playing this level of football and not getting wins associated with it, because he is a guy who I think has had a better career than what some folks may give him credit for in a variety of head coaches, a variety of offensive systems, a variety of weaponry around him. And he's been a really dependable guy throughout that time. So Jalen Johnson, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Falcons try to go about attacking things, because a lot of the dialogue from the broadcast so far through a couple of weeks are, well, hey, you got Pro Bowler Kyle Fuller on one side. Let's see if they attack the rookie. It's not necessarily that simple, because now folks have a couple of weeks of film on the rookie, Jalen Johnson, playing really well and being stylistically different from Kyle Fuller. So of course, if you're just on paper, yes, you'd rather attack the rookie than a guy who plays as well as Kyle Fuller. But in the Falcons offense, where you have so much weaponry available to you and a quarterback who will read the defense, who can sort of dictate where he's most comfortable going with the ball, there's a chance you could see if he would actually prefer to get the ball in the hands of a Julio Jones, if he's healthy enough to go, and just say, Julio, let's let you run after the catch a little bit. Then maybe it's going to be Kyle Fuller plays more off coverage. We want to get it towards Kyle Fuller more frequently, as opposed to having to throw it into what might be a more condensed space, because Jalen Johnson is the one more apt to play, more likely to play some press man coverage. So I think that'll be really noteworthy throughout the game. Perhaps who's getting more looks. And it may even just adjust by half, maybe one half. They're going to see if they like a matchup on one end of the field. If they're not liking how that's going, you may see a different half with a different thing where Jalen Johnson will have to be on guard in a different manner, because he and Fuller are different types of guys. And Fuller obviously proven himself as a high-level player. And Johnson's been doing his thing for 2 weeks.
The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Glenview Luxury Imports. The North Shore's newest Alfa Romeo and Maserati dealership has arrived. Visit gliglenview.com. They've got it. You mentioned Matt Ryan. And if you would just look at his numbers of his career, this is some pretty heady stuff. He's thrown for 51,909 yards in his career. He has thrown 327 touchdowns, 148 interceptions. He has a career passer rating of 94.8. So when I scroll down his Pro Football Reference page, they don't do the similarity scores in the same way they do for baseball, but they have players whose career was of similar quality and shape. Let me give you this is for his career. These are his comps. Aaron Rodgers, Joe Montana, Philip Rivers, Ken Anderson, Dan Marino, Roger Staubach, John Elway, Russell Wilson, Dan Fouts, and Jim Kelly. He's been to 4 Pro Bowls. Are we talking about a Hall of Famer?
I think we're talking about a guy on that arc. I don't think it would be definitive if he hung him up today. But just like I don't think it should be definitive for a Philip Rivers if he hung it up today. But to me, I feel like Matt Ryan has been a better quarterback throughout his career than Philip Rivers, whereas Philip Rivers is a guy who folks tend to talk about as this surefire Hall of Famer. And I don't agree with that notion about Rivers. I've debated this with Pat Finley a bit on Twitter at times. He's a big Philip Rivers guy. And I think Rivers has been in structure, in consistency of personnel, of coaching, of excellence on each side of the ball throughout much of his career. And now he's dropped down into a situation in Indianapolis where the personnel for the Colts has been built up for Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck hangs him up. And now Philip Rivers has dropped into a really good position there, where that hasn't been the case with Matt Ryan, as I was detailing moments ago, via coaching changes, personnel changes. And I think that even Matthew Stafford, man, you can make a case to me that Matthew Stafford, because of all the flux that's been there in Detroit over the years and in personnel issues that have been there, but Matthew Stafford has had to deal with more than Philip Rivers. So I think Matt Ryan is on a Hall of Fame arc. I don't think he would be there as of today, but the way he's playing right now and the Falcons still losing games despite that, and you look at the way he hits people in stride, snap after snap, the way that when pass protection breaks down, like courage might be an overused word in sports, but when you're a quarterback and you got somebody 300 plus, but like there's going to be clips where Akeem Hicks, during that game on Sunday, will have whipped the tail of the guard and the center in front of him, so slung 600 pounds to the side, and at 320, Akeem Hicks is going to be bearing down into the sternum of Matthew Ryan, and Matt Ryan is going to stand there knowing it's coming. He's going to take it and still very likely deliver an accurate ball. Maybe it won't reach the hands of the receiver because the Bears' defense is going to be all over him, but that's been the story of Matt Ryan's career, in my opinion, a guy who is willing to show that courage in the face of duress from really big, angry people and still stand in the pocket, take it over and over again. So he doesn't nearly have the passing talents of Aaron Rodgers. He certainly hasn't had the organizational structure of some of the other great quarterbacks that you name, like a Joe Montana and the like. But I think he's had an outstanding football career for the position he's been in Atlanta, and feels a bit underappreciated, in my opinion.
We have one more segment coming your way with Anthony Herron. I want to get into the risk-reward of a particular Bears special teams decision and the thought that goes into it. That and more coming your way next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
What I like about Cordero is he brings that speed and power, that combination of speed and power, every time he touches the football. You feel that. You can see it in practice, the different ways that we get him the football. I think you all see it when he plants that right or left foot in the ground on some of those runs, and he hits that hole really fast. He's not 190 pounds. You know, he's 225 pounds and can fly. So that part we like, and I think he's really, you know, whether we get him the ball on a screen, whether we take a shot downfield in the passing game or running the football, you know, in the backfield, I think he's only going to keep improving.
Matt Nagy on Cordero Patterson. This segment is brought to you by Valparaiso University. The satisfaction that comes with living to your full potential is immeasurable. It's a quality of life that Valparaiso University graduates enjoy every day. At Valpo, your full potential receives their total commitment. Visit valpo.edu to request information, to apply, or schedule a visit. If you're watching on Twitch, you see Anthony Herron, who is bopping along to our background music, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. Cordero Patterson does what he does, and he is a proven commodity as a kick returner and beginning to prove himself also as a running back in this scheme. He's bringing out a lot of kicks, even 7-8 yards deep in the end zone. And I know it's a read, and I know they have to make sure they've got their blocks, that there's nobody necessarily coming free. But it does look to me like they've dialed up the risk of that, and they're defaulting more to, hell yeah, we want him to have a chance to break one rather than not. And if it means he gets tackled at the 18 or the 15 or the 11, it's still worth the possibility that he pops one. Do you agree?
I do. I like it because he's talented enough to allow that. And that level of aggression, especially when you consider that there are other areas of Bears special teams where they just can't be as aggressive. Like, I mean, whether, you know, having Kyrell Santos out there kicking the ball, you're not going to feel as good saying, like, you're not going to make the same call to try a 50-plus yarder to try and close the game out. Like, who was it? Sean Payton was able to do that. Or, no, John Gruden. We saw John Gruden do that with his kicker the other night. And you're not going to be able to do that if you're the Chicago Bears. So we have one phase that's perhaps costing you yards, perhaps costing you points. Then you want to take advantage of something to gain some of those yards and potentially those points back in other phases. You know, the Bears defense is getting back to where they're starting to take the ball away a little bit. It almost led to some points on that Eddie Jackson play, which I know it was bang, bang. There were so many people arguing with me about whether it was the right or the wrong call. It was the right call under the circumstances, but I do think that this is an opportunity. The Bears are allowing a very talented runner of the football in the best phase that he's in. Like, he's still figuring out running back. He never completely figures out wide receiver, but there's some things he can do for you there. There's nothing left for him to figure out his kick return. I mean, the dude's a beast. So, yeah, they're letting him. It's up to him. If you feel it, if you like it, if you get the ball and you're not out of breath, then go with it. And he's going with it a lot, and it's not costing them anything. It'll be different if he starts to cough the ball up, or if he's tripping over his own feet at the 10-yard line, or people are tackling him inside the 20 or 25. But that's really not happening very much. So, yeah, go with it.
The other thing that I like about this season, and I don't know if this is a directive from the top. There's been some speculation that we talked to Mike Florio about it, that the referees are not blowing as many whistles. That's just a fact. that it used to be. Over the last few years, I got ready for every kickoff or punt return to have an illegal block in the back or to have somebody do something because they were so actively looking for it. It may just be that they've told the officials in for whatever reason, instead of looking hard for penalties, make sure they jump out at you. Now, if you're Khalil Mack and you say, yeah, I've got guys choking me, holding my neck every time, and they're not calling it, I wonder if there's maybe a net benefit in some of these special team stuff for the teams that do have a really good return man that might not get that game breaker called back because of something ticky-tack.
I think there's certainly the potential for it to benefit that phase, but then juxtapose it with other phases where it's not so much, you know, because I do think that whether you're talking about holding in a pass rush scenario, if you're talking about illegal contact during a route combination, yeah, there are other scenarios where if the refs aren't blowing the flag quite as much, where you're not necessarily going to see the benefit or the gain from that as the squad who's not getting the flag blown in their favor, but if you are seeing that, like a lot of coaches and teams, they'll scout out who the officials are for our particular matchup and how the white hat, how the head official tends to operate with things. You know, if you do have a game where they're not as likely to call things on the line of scrimmage, or if this particular crew isn't necessarily going to flag OPI as much, so maybe we can get away with a little more nudging. Those are things that as you get closer and closer to game time and your entire checklist of what's important, what are we scouting, what are we preparing the players for, by the time you get to the end of the week, and especially leading into game day itself, you'll get a little bit of a sense for that as a coach and perhaps, you know, communicate that to your players as well. So if it is feeling like it's rampant around the league this week, there are times where a coach will communicate specifically to an officiating crew and say that here's a position group for our opponent where we feel like they're getting away with too much. Like, hey, we feel like Grady Jarrett's getting a little bit too much of a bead on the snap count. He's getting off a hair early, and it's, you know, it's forcing some people into the backfield in some bad situations. Make sure you watch that. You can communicate that directly to the official. But then conversely, there may be things where you go into the game and communicate with your players saying that, you know what, we think this crew's letting folks get away with this particular aspect of the game, and we could be more aggressive there.
Let's talk about this game. I'm relatively pessimistic. And it has to do with the fact that I, just at large, regarding the outcome of this game for the Bears. I should be specific. Thank you for making sure that I am. But it's hard for me to see a Falcons team after what happened last week, dropping to 0-3 at home against a Bears team that hasn't really beaten anybody and wasn't able to separate either time against a team from which it should have separated. But things are weird, and I know football is strange, and these outcomes, no matter what you think about the first three quarters, everything can go sideways in the fourth. The Bears know it, and the Falcons know it. Just in general, I think this is probably the equivalent of a market correction.
It feels like that. It does, and I felt like that. I may have even said it on our on the post game show on 32 last week, but the way the Falcons have lost their first two games, as well as they've played on offense, as fast as they play on defense, and the Bears offense has done, you know, overall, like, you know, you obviously have the two interceptions last week, but they're not putting the ball on the ground in the run game. There haven't necessarily been, while there's a couple interceptions in the game from Mitch last week, there's not the consistency of passes feeling like they're in harm's way. And it's not because the Bears' passing attack is strictly lateral this season, but it is a really fast and aggressive sort of Falcons defense that has the potential to take the football away. They've been effective with takeaways. They kept getting the ball on the ground from the Cowboys last week in their game, and some they could have had even more takeaways. The Falcons were able to recover some of the fumbles that were being forced. So it does have that feel to it. I mean, I think trends can be overstated at times, and momentum, you know, there's momentum truthers out there, but I do think that these two teams are trending in a direction where it's safe to think that the Falcons will certainly be playing even better football than they've already been playing overall, but certainly on the offensive end. Now, Todd Gurley looks like he's 36 as opposed to 26, so that's a problem for Atlanta, but I've already talked about how well I think Matt Ryan's playing. And when it comes down to it, I think in the end, just as far as just the gut reaction to things, I think there's potential we could come out of this game seeing a Bears victory and still being uncertain about the Bears, because that would mean the Falcons are 0-3. So, all right, if the Bears beat a team that was 0-2 and now they're 0-3 and it was one of the worst defenses in football, especially against the run, then what does that really even mean? Well, it may still mean we're not certain about the Bears after that fact. But I do think there are things to be to feel good about with the way the Bears have been trending. We've talked about the run game a lot through a couple of weeks here, and the Falcons are a defense that's shown a, you know, a proponents to give up some rushing yardage. And it feels like the game plan should be for Chicago that we should see Matt Nagy do what we've seen him doing the first couple of weeks, perhaps even to a larger extent, because you know the opponent has weaponry, has a quarterback who can take advantage of it, can put the ball in the end zone. Then perhaps you maybe don't necessarily completely take the air out of the football, but you want the game at your tempo as opposed to the Falcons' tempo. And the Falcons' tempo is what we saw them doing last week against Dallas. They're going to throw it. They're going to run and gun it. They're going to get as many points on the board with as many possessions as possible. So it will suit the Bears to limit possessions in this game and then see as you get it into the fourth quarter if you're in a position to outlast an Atlanta team that hasn't shown the ability to outlast their opponents so far.
Anthony Heron, thanks as always. Appreciate it much.
You should try the ice cream cleanse sometime. I swear it's worth your time. Thanks, Dan.
That is solid advice. Maybe I'll take it. Anthony Heron, we will be heard on Sunday on the Prop Swap post-game show presented by PNC Bank. He and Olin Krutz will be on after Cubs post-game. And I should also mention, of course, our pregame show, 9 a.m. to noon, Hub, Patrick Manley and Olin Krutz, the Bet Rivers pregame show presented by Mail Medical. We're going to continue football talk with our guy, NFL draft scout. That's Matt Miller. He comes up next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.